Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Ray Penny. I'm with the New Jersey School Board Association. This is our podcast, a special podcast, Conversations with Educators on the COVID-19 front line. Just a program designed to give you some good news about how our educators have stepped up to the plate and are dealing with this situation. If you want to ask a question to our guest, you can call in 1-347-989-8904 and just press the number 1, and that will let Robin know, who's managing our switchboard, to get your name. Or if you're in the chat room, you can just type in a question. I'll pass it on to him. This will be about 20 to 30 minute podcast. With me is Dr. Robert Zawicki from the Mount Olive School District in Morris County. Welcome, Dr. Zawicki. How
are you? Thank you very much. Appreciate it. I'm doing well. I really appreciate you having me on.
Okay. And just for our listeners who do not know where Mount Olive is and the type of school district it is, could you just give us a very brief overview of it?
Sure. Mount Olive is in western Morris County. If you come out of the Lincoln Tunnel and go straight west on Route 80 for about 45, 50 minutes, you will hit Mount Olive. It's a lovely community. It's, you know, suburban, exurban, if you will. We have about 4,600 students in the school district, 4 elementary schools, a middle school, and a high school. And it's the district that's had a long history of being really innovative and progressive, which is what attracted me to the district. And we have fantastic families and amazing teachers and wonderful students.
Okay. And you did mention, and it is true, that Mount Olive has had a history of trying to be on the edge of cutting edge of technology and learning techniques. When you planned out your year, this was not on your radar, I don't think, the outbreak and schools being closed. When you first started getting to the field of this, what were some of the steps that you took?
So we started discussing it with my administrative team about, I would say, about a month before, some of the official things happened. But we were monitoring it actually, you know, in December. We had some high incidence of flu in December, and we switched over to total flu protocols in early December. And then when we heard about coronavirus, we said, okay, we're going to keep this going indefinitely. And those flu protocols were, we have electrostatic sanitizing guns and basically extra overtime shifts where we sanitized our buses, sanitized all our touch points and flat surfaces throughout the district. So that was a lot of extra work, and we were there since December. So from that perspective, we were somewhat prepped. On March 5th, I went to a meeting in Trenton with some superintendents and the commissioner. And the commissioner explained that based upon this evolving crisis that the DOE was going to be issuing some guidance regarding, you know, what previously defined home instruction, what does home instruction look like, and that there might be these closures. So that was pretty mind-blowing. I remember driving back from Trenton. I called my board president, called many of my board members, and I'm like, this is becoming real. Called my whole admin team. March 6th, I summoned together my whole admin team and said, you know, we need to start preparing to deliver instruction. What is that going to look like? And so at this point, I want to give a huge shout out to my board because, you know, we were one of the first districts in the state who mobilized. We immediately put out to our staff and to our parents that following Monday, March 9th, we were going to have a professional development day, that kids weren't going to come in, and we were going to prep for the closure. So, you know, over that weekend, you know, I was getting calls from lots of superintendents who were like, are you really doing this? Is this for real? Is this really going on? And, you know, my board was, you know, like I said, that mindset of support and being a team, they were right there with me, you know, that we got to be prepped for whatever comes next. So on Monday, March 9th, I brought my full staff together, all employees in the district, everybody, and explained to them that, one, if a closure did happen, we would continue, you know, with operations in the district, that's payroll and all that other stuff. But most importantly, we need to support families during this time period. And so, but at that point, we only thought it was going to be 2 weeks at the most. And I think everyone was in that position. So we had, you know, over the previous 16 months, we did a lot of work with the Future Ready Schools certification program. I personally trained over 300 teachers on Google Level 1 and Level 2 certification. So, you know, a lot of these pedagogies that we were, you know, starting to work with really were well suited for this kind of asynchronous blended online and also old school paper distance learning format. But most of it was going to be asynchronous, and we leveraged choice boards. So we broke out all of our teachers into subject and grade level PLCs, and they developed 2 to 3 weeks worth of plans. So then we were kind of prepped and ready to go that Friday, which was the 13th. We put the word out that we would be closing as of the 16th, and then the next week the governor put out that everyone would be closed. What we quickly recognized was that the asynchronous piece would only really be good for about 2 weeks, and that if this was going to go beyond March 27th, we needed to switch things up. And that's really where we are now. And so we've made a switch to a more directed, basically online school format.
And so what are some of the obstacles in this that you felt? I mean, you were probably a little bit more prepared than a lot of districts because you were working on this beforehand, but still, there must have been some obstacle. What was some of the hardest parts?
So I think the first part was, and I kept saying this over and over again, you know, we had many teachers who wanted to go right to this online format right on March 16th. The problem was we did not have, you know, first of all, we weren't one-to-one throughout the whole district. We have enough devices in our buildings, but truly with taking devices home, it was just our high school students. Our plan is to do that next year at the middle school. So the first thing we did was we made sure we deployed devices to all of our middle school students and then had a device request pickup, pickups by request for families in grades K-5. They didn't have devices at home. So we've done 2 deployments for those elementary kids. But essentially any kid in district who wants a Chromebook can get one. The other thing we did was we worked with our internet provider that all of our devices that we give to families are web-enabled. So if a kid has one of our devices and parents can just request one, they have internet access, and so it took time to do that. So we didn't have that ready to go on the 16th. It took those extra 2 weeks to get all that up and rolling. We now have that as of March 30th. So that was a big equity point. So that idea that this was going to exacerbate, you know, the haves and have-nots of who has internet, who doesn't. And we were looking at about 10 to 15% of our kids did not have, you know, a good source of internet access. So overcoming that big hurdle was one of, I think, the biggest challenges, and we have since done that.
Wow. And how is the virtual learning? What makes virtual learning good virtual learning? How is it different from the classroom brick and mortar instruction?
So completely, the first thing is flexibility, right? So where we spent a lot of time as an administrative team were designing schedules that provided flexibility. And one, flexibility for teachers, because our teachers are home with their kids, their families. They might have people in their families who are sick, et cetera. So the idea of people logging on totally synchronously from 8:30 in the morning to 3 o'clock in the afternoon, it's just unreasonable. We can't do that for teachers or for kids. So we wanted to design a schedule that provided flexibility, and we've done that. So basically we have blocks of time where teachers, you know, math is 8 to 10. So if kids want to participate in a synchronous lesson, they know that on A day and C day that math is during that time period, and that social studies is during B day and D day. Because what was happening was actually a good problem. We had multiple teachers at the same time sending requests for Google Hangouts to kids, and kids were like, well, which class do I participate in? So we had to set up a schedule that provided some flexibility based upon kids, you know, the dynamics in their home, whether they all were able to get online, also for the teachers, and that we did have this overlap of instruction. And so we've successfully done that, and we put out some, I think, some really thoughtful schedules. We're in day 4 of that, and I think it's working really well. So it's a balance between when can you be synchronous, when are you posting things where the kids are working independently, and then where's that support? So one of the things with our teachers, we worked out that besides all of our teachers doing one session a week of actual instruction, they're also doing office hour sessions so that kids who need support while they're working independently or they can't make the other session, that their teachers are available to them. And we're doing those synchronous instruction sessions and office hours through Google Hangouts.
Do the classroom aides participate in any of that extra help or as part of that hours?
We have started to incorporate them. That started more this week. The other thing that I think, you know, that I'm really proud of that we've done, we have a tier 2 response intervention program called the Mount Olive Success Academy that runs during regular school session in the morning or in the afternoon, 3 days a week. We're also running that program via Google Hangouts with small group instruction. So we're running our intervention program, and we're also running our after-school gifted and talented program via Google Hangouts as well. So we're trying as much as possible. We know it's not perfect. We know it's not the same as all being together in school, but we're trying to continue that continuity of academic programs as much as possible.
You did a lot, and you kind of touched on it before, but how do you communicate this out? I know how you did it with the staff. How do you communicate this out to the parents and the students so that they're all on board with it? How did you do that? Because it seems like you have a pretty good method for doing that.
So it's really, you know, it's a scattershot of communications, but very deliberate. But you gotta you know, we can't under communicate. So I think first and foremost, we have everything posted on our website. We also leverage all of our social media, so it's on Twitter, and it's on Facebook. I'm now doing a daily blog, so there's a daily update for me that parents can subscribe to. In the early days, it's a month ago. In the early days of this, I did a bunch of videos. Since then, I've done parent universities. I did a couple via Google Hangout. I'm now doing them via Facebook Live. I actually did one last night where parents can post questions and they can hear from me. So, you know, trying to saturate this way everyone has as much information as possible. And then also, you know, the principals are doing daily announcements. They're doing little videos. They're also doing messages to the kids, and then the individual teachers, you know, putting out information via Google Classroom. So the idea is that there's a daily flow of information, which can, I understand, be overwhelming to parents. But I'd rather, you know, over-communicate rather than people say, I didn't know. So that's flowing every single day from us to the families.
Wow. You mentioned what the principals are doing. I have heard concerns, what's the role of the principal, now that they don't have a building, and what is the role of the administrators? Do they help put the word out for you and help you in different buildings and with the students?
Absolutely. All of my administrators, they're working their butts off. You know, I feel like not that we weren't working hard earlier, but the days now are so much longer in some ways. We have our own administrative meetings, but they all are tasked with different things. But they're you know, providing direct support to students and to teachers, helping to solve different issues, because all of our kids have different family circumstances. So there's lots of different issues where we're trying to be flexible or make accommodations for kids. And so our principals are really the point for that. The other thing is to keep that normalcy going. So our principals are doing morning announcements and the pledge in the morning, and they're doing video messages. I have one principal who has like kind of like a puzzle quest going on. I have other principals who are reading bedtime stories to kids and doing things like that. So the principals are extremely active. And I think one of the reasons why our you know, the feedback I hear from our families is really positive, because the kids still feel connected. And I think the principals are a big part of making that happen, that it's not just the teachers.
In many ways, the principal is the face of that building, of that school, to the parents and to the students.
Absolutely.
I just wanted to backtrack one thing that you mentioned, and I meant to do a follow-up, but you went on to a couple other things. Within your parent university, what are some of the goals of the parent university that you're doing?
So I think the first thing is just for parents to get some face time with me. You know, to get a little bit of an adult conversation about what's going on. So one, for parents to see that I'm engaged, to see my face, to hear my voice, to hear from me. It's one thing to read a blog or read a post on social media, but to hear me actually explain what this looks like and give examples of it, I think is really important. But the real goal is, you know, trying to explain the nuances of this unprecedented pedagogical shift in which we're redesigning education, and explain that to parents who are stressed out, who've got kids at home, who are juggling work, and who are not necessarily folks with an education background, meaning they're not part of the profession. You know, so that's a heavy lift. And so anytime that I can do that verbally and people can see my inflections and things like that, I think is really important. So that's the main goal. And then not only that, you know, when people can throw comments and questions on Facebook, you also get a sense of, you know, what are the hot button issues. So, you know, questions that I keep answering, repeatedly, that I don't have the answers to. What's happening for the prom? I don't know yet. What day will graduation be? I don't know if we're even going to have one. Right? So, you know, I've answered, you know, is the middle school trip going to Washington, D.C.? That was scheduled for June. You know, so like now I'm starting off my parent universities with, okay, so here are the answers to these questions. I don't know about the following things: sports, the prom, the Washington, D.C. trip. But yeah. I think them hearing it from me also dispel some rumors as well. But it's also just, once again, the way that the, you know, principals are the face of the buildings. I'm the face of the district. And so they can hear my voice and see what we're working on.
Well, as we move forward on this, and this is a big challenge all across the state, and it's different in every school district, what do you see as some of the challenges that keep you up at night as we move forward on this? Because it looks like it's going to be a fairly long time that we're doing this.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things. I think one, you know, kids who are at risk for a variety of reasons, you know, there in every district there are kids who, where school is, you know, the safest place for them in so many different ways, emotionally, a lot of different ways. So for kids who don't have the best home environment, you know, I worry about those kids. I worry about what is it going to look like when we do come back? Is it just going to, we're going to get a notice on a Friday and we all show up on Monday? You know, we can't just go back into instruction. We have to, you know, debrief from this experience, you know, kind of social, emotionally, and, you know, what is that going to look like? And then, you know, there's the other thing is, globally in education, this is exacerbating the gaps, you know, the gaps that were there before that are predicated upon, you know, socioeconomic issues. You know, kids who have four devices at home and have, you know, two parents to help them and older siblings and everyone's healthy. And, you know, those kids are going to potentially do better than kids who don't have all those resources at home. So I worry about that globally in education. And then, you know, and then the other piece of that, how do we make up for that? And when is that going to happen? Because if we are out until June, are there going to be summer remedial programs? Are we going to be able to do that? Or are we just going to wait until September? So there's so many questions out there about all that. But I think, you know, the main worry for me are those at-risk kids.
Well, and including at-risk is special education. Has that been a difficult obstacle too?
So I would say for us, it hasn't been, because that first day when we got together on March 9th, I, you know, beat the drum for the whole entire staff. This needs to be fully differentiated for all kids. So, you know, our baseline instruction, we've been designing it to meet the needs of all kids. We just kind of had the handcuffs taken off recently from the feds and from the state, and that we can provide related services now via Google Hangout and teleconference and things like that. So that is helping us. But one of the things that we've done for our families is that our guidance counselors and our child study team members are available by appointment, basically 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. So if there's any of those questions, families can reach out and we can be really, really responsive. So, you know, when it comes to this, are, you know, to be completely honest, are we going to be able to absolutely fulfill every IEP? Is anyone going to be able to do that? I don't think so. I think everyone's making best efforts to do so, to try and get that. But there are, based on kids, you know, disabilities and with these physical limitations, there are challenges there. So that is something that's a global conversation we have to talk about. You know, what about kids with IEPs during this whole process?
Yeah, and I want to go. We're talking to Dr. Robert Zawicki, Superintendent of Mount Olive. If you have a question, you can dial 1-347-989-8901. Press 1, and that will let Robin know that you have a question, or you can just type it into the chat room, and I'll pass it on to Dr. Zawicki. Let's talk about some of the things, though, that you're proud of in your district. And I know one thing I saw, but you can add to the other ones. What about the face masks that you're helping to create?
Sure. So I'll definitely highlight that. The thing I'm most proud of are our teachers, because, you know, they're stressed out as everyone else, and they are just absolutely hitting it out of the ballpark, just going above and beyond for our kids. And doing so much in this really, tense and unprecedented environment. So I want to say that our teachers are amazing. And so, you know, we have, under the leadership of our engineering teacher, Dave Bodmer, we're really lucky at Mount Olive High School. We have the MIL, which is the Marauder Innovation Learning Lab. And we actually have a bay of 35 3D printers. So Dave was contacted by Rutgers and NYU and Montclair State saying, like, hey, we hear you have all these 3D printers, do you think you could help us out? So starting last week, Dave started printing components for face shields, basically the piece that goes across the forehead. and they were printing about 100 a day. They've shifted the design a little bit, and they're working with some folks from Warren Hills Regional High School. And, you know, they're now delivering. I'm about to post on Facebook, you know, pictures of the face shields that have been delivered to doctors and nurses at Hackettstown and Newton Hospital at Morristown, and also for our first responders. So, you know, even though the building is sealed, we have a couple of superhero teachers that are you know, printing and supplying this protective gear to our frontline medical professionals. That I'm super proud of.
Wow. And I know you try to, you know, ahead of the curve in terms of technology. It's probably not something that you expected. Was there anything else that a teacher did you said, wow, I wish I would have thought of that?
I think how teachers are creatively, I don't want to say tricking kids, but using the Hangouts not just to do direct instruction, but using when they can get kids on Hangouts and have synchronous sessions to make it a social emotional support, where they're really asking kids about what's going on with you, tell me about cool things that have happened. Oh, you lost a tooth, you learned to ride a bike without training wheels, right? So I think the emotional connection that's happening during those sessions, right before they're, you know, before they're jumping into, you know, learning about long division, I think that point of contact that the teachers are having with their kids and how it's keeping our kids to feel connected and safe, I think that's really, really important. And that's the part that impresses me the most, that giving of time and that social emotional support that our teachers are providing for our kids.
Well, that's really impressive, because I think the one thing that I was worried about was that social emotional aspect of learning and teaching, and a lot of those kids are going to need that, and they might need it more now than they did before. So that's impressive.
Absolutely.
Any other final thoughts? Any other final recommendations or thoughts as we move forward? We're coming towards the end.
I think the biggest thing, you know, I know there's, and this is for, you know, board members listening and fellow superintendents who are listening out there. You know, right now, I know there's these conversations about, well, how are we going to evaluate teachers? And are we going to do video observations? Like, to me, those are all conversations we can have in a couple of weeks. I think right now we need to look out for the, you know, like I said, the mental, the social, emotional health of our teachers and our students. And if our teachers feel supported, they're going to continue to embrace these technologies and be there for our kids. I don't think this is a time to be scheduling meetings with teachers about SGOs or doing observations. We're going to have plenty of time to do that. I'm hoping there's some type of portfolio format for that, rather than, you know, this shouldn't be a gotcha time with teachers. This should be a time to celebrate teachers and all the amazing things that they're doing for families. And I think that's the most important thing. If we support our teachers, our kids will be supported through this process.
Right. And I guess when you talked about before, that's probably one of the jobs of the principal and the other administrators, is to be supportive and monitor the teachers too at this point. Not to play gotcha, as you said.
Not a gotcha, okay. But what can we do to help you? And, you know, and for me, back to the evaluation piece, if this is going to be a thing where we're still doing evaluations, I want to do it a portfolio. I want to look at a portfolio of what teachers have done in Google Classroom and have a conversation that's reflective, rather than being big brother in a video chat watching a teacher with kids. I don't think that's you know, conducive to the culture we're trying to build right now of mutual support, and that we're all in this together, and let's help each other through this process.
Okay. That brings us to the end of this podcast. I'd like to thank Dr. Robert Zawicki. He's the superintendent of the Mount Olive School District. I hope you enjoyed. I think you brought up some very good points. I'm impressed at how quickly you responded. Actually, you started responding quicker because you could see it coming a little bit, which I think a lot of us did not. So I'd like to thank you, and I'd like to congratulate
you
and your entire teaching staff for the way that they have really pulled together and they're still helping the kids in Mount Olive.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Okay. That brings us to the end, and I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Dr. Zawicki. And you can all have a good afternoon.